At The Village Church, we like to say, no one belongs here more than you. The Village Church is not just a church for people who feel like they are church people. This is a church for lifelong churchgoers and for people who have never stepped foot inside a church building. Whether you know a lot about God or have a lot of questions about God, you belong here. At The Village Church, you'll find a community of people who love Jesus and love doing life together. The mission of The Village Church is to help ordinary people become disciples of Jesus, who make disciples, who make disciples, who change the world. We know following Jesus isn't something we do on our own. Instead, we follow him together. We encourage and empower each other to dream, serve, give, lead, and make a difference. We work together to change the world, starting in our own backyard. We're for hope, we're for people, we're for the community, because no one belongs here more than you.
Well, hey, good morning. I'm Travis. I'm one of the pastors here at The Village. So glad that you're here with us. Thanks, Allison.
You're welcome,
ladies
Travis.
And gentlemen, Allison Facy.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I'm super excited about today because today is the last Sunday that we're looking at the Gospel of Luke. We started this about, I don't know if that's like excitement or sadness, and we started this about 18 months ago, just going straight through the Gospel of Luke, and today we thought it'd be just fun to kind of celebrate the things that we've learned together, the things that we've done together. And I'll be really honest with you, I'm really sad. I've been really sad all week that this is the last week that we're looking at Luke, because Luke's become my good buddy. I feel like Luke and I have become pals. We've been hanging out a lot, and I've really loved this, and you might be ready to move on to something else, but I'm not. So, now, I said last week, I warned you, if you were here, I said, last week of Luke, we're going to have a test, and there will be prizes. And I wasn't kidding about that. So, I'd like to welcome you to the final exam of Luke, and I want to say, yes. I want to say, even if you haven't been here for any of Luke, you still have a shot, because it's not like anybody's been paying attention, right? I mean, let's be honest. So here's what I want you to do. We're going to have an interactive final exam. I need you to get out your phone. Oh, Lord, that is right. We're really doing this. So get out your phone. If you don't have a phone, you can, like, maybe lean in on your neighbor, or you can do a paper, you can, like, do a tally on a Connect card, on the back of a Connect card with a pen, and see how you're doing in your answers. If you got a phone, so just so you know, when you log in and you answer this question, be careful, some words will start to appear on the screen that you have put into your phone, so you got to be careful about what you put on here. But if you go to menti.com, M-E-N-T-I.com, and type in the code 113173 as the code, and this is your check-in question. What words do you think of when you look back on our study of Luke? So you can take a minute to do that. Menti.com, M-E-N-T-I.com, 113173. Three of you are doing awesome. Woo! All right, now we're moving. What do you think of? What word do you think of when you look back on our study of the Gospel of Luke? I am so glad to see that so far Jesus is in the middle. That's so good. It makes me very, Luke might be taking over. I like that. What word do you think of when you think about our study of the Gospel of Luke? I think of the word Luke. That's very good. That's very good. Keep going. Y'all are doing great. Keep weighing in here. Got Jesus, sacrifice. Somebody, thank you so much. Long. Thank you for that. I really appreciate that. Forgiveness, companionship, good heart, discipleship. Humility. Yes, okay, thank you. Long. That's great. Hope, truth, faithful, gospel, researched, amazing. Continuity, ministry, salvation, crazy, big, loving, engagement. Yeah, these are all amazing things. These are all amazing things. So here's how this quiz is going to work. We do have prizes, and your grade will be not only on the accuracy of your response, but also the speed of your response will be taken into account in this. So just be prepared for that. So everybody ready? Here we go. I want you to pretend like you're excited. We've worked hard on the Luke test. I want you to just pretend for my heart. Everybody ready?
Ready.
Okay. What enthusiasm we have. This is really good. All right, question number one. How many weeks do you think we spent in the book of Luke? How many weeks? You got a choice from 0 to 100. How many weeks did we spend in the Gospel of Luke? Answers coming in. How many weeks?
79.
Very close, very close. 78. Are we ready for the answer? We're close. Boom, 67. Who got 67? We had 67 weeks in the Gospel of Luke. Next question. We have 12 questions for each of the disciples. Question number one, here we go. Or maybe this is question number two. Which of these did Travis not do during our study of Luke? Look at your device. Cold plunge on stage, jump on a trampoline, block the doors with caution tape, rap a Snoop Dogg song, or option five, he did all of these things. 10 seconds. Call out your answer. Yeah, I did do all of those things. All right, here we go. We got our first leaderboard. We have Magical Rhino. Where's Magical Rhino? That's your name on the device. Magical Rhino, you're in first place. Congratulations on that. Second question, here we go. All right, here we go, here we go. Second question. Which of these was not a lost thing in one of Jesus' parables? Which was not a lost thing? A coin, a tent, a son, a sheep. Which of these was not a lost thing in one of the parables? 5 seconds. All right, call out your answer. It was a tent. A tent was not lost. I've lost a tent before, but Jesus did not lose a tent in one of the parables. All right, here's our leaderboard. Bill's now in second place. That's good. Good movement. Number three, here we go. Who did Luke write to so that he could know that the stories about Jesus were true? Mark, Caesar, Theophilus, or Geronimo? Who did Luke write to so that they could know that the things about Jesus were true? 3 seconds, 2, 1. Call it out. It was Theophilus. Theophilus in Luke chapter 1. Good job on that. Here we go. Our updated leaderboard. Bran the Broken is making a move. Okay, Bill and Millie and Tweedo. Tweedo's in third place. I don't know who that is. Next question. Here we go. Who told Luke, I am your father? Okay, who told Luke, I am your... Han Solo, Darth Vader, or the Apostle Paul? Who told Luke, I am your father? Call it out. It was, in fact, Darth Vader. It was Darth Vader. Next question. Who told Jesus, I am your father? Who told Jesus, I am your father? Was it Joseph, John the Baptist, the voice of God, or a mean Pharisee? Who told Jesus, I am your father? All right, everybody has voted. Good job. It was the voice of God. I was really hoping somebody would say it was a mean Pharisee, but All right, let's check out our leaderboard. How are we doing? Oh, we're real. All right, Tweedo, where are you? Tweedo's here. Where's Ben? Where's Bill? Ben will be moving down the rankings now because his phone is dead. All right, next question. Always charge before church, sir. All right, here we go. How did the people in Jesus' hometown try to welcome him? By a feast of unleavened bread, by a great banquet, by a festival of lights, by trying to throw him off a cliff. Which of these things did the people in Jesus' hometown do to try to welcome him? Answer is, yeah, by trying to throw him off a cliff. What a great welcome. It makes me nervous sometimes that our building is up on a hill. All right, where are we at? Maverick's making a move. Maverick was the fastest. Where's Maverick? You were the fastest one on that one. Way to go. Give it up for Maverick. Where's Goose? Is Goose? No, I don't know. Okay, next question. Who was not a disciple of Jesus in Luke? Who was not a disciple in Luke? Thaddeus, James, Simon, Bartholomew. Who was not a disciple in Luke? 5 seconds. It was Thaddeus. Thaddeus was not a disciple in Luke. All right, here we go. How's our leaderboard? Larissa Kelly. Who is Larissa Kelly? All right. Here we go. Question number 8. We're getting close. Jesus said, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are ridiculously good looking, at home, few, not very smart. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are one of these things." 5 seconds. It is few, yeah. Who said the workers are ridiculously good looking? Anyone? No. Like who? Where's that from? Zoolander said they're ridiculously good looking. Yeah. All right, we got Tweedo. Where's Tweedo? Still in first place, Tweedo. Way to go. Okay, here we go. Next. A few more questions remaining. The short guy who gave half of all his money to the poor was named Zacharias, Zacchaeus, Zecharias, or Danny DeVito. It's one of those four. It's one of those four. 3 seconds. Who was it? Zacchaeus. But 6 of you made the right choice. Danny DeVito. Where are we? Tweedo, how you doing? Ooh. Oh, all right. We got Tweedo, Whitmore, Brand the Broken, Bill, and Jenny. Jenny was the fastest on that one. Way to go. Okay. Next question. Here it is. Oh, they are good prizes. In Luke, Jesus said he has come to seek and save the lost. Bring life and bring it to the full. Make disciples of all nations or help people get to heaven. Which one of these did Jesus say in Luke that he has come to do this thing? Call out your answer. Yeah, seek and save the lost. In Matthew, that's where Jesus said, make disciples of all nations. Here we go. Woo! Okay. Where's Millie? Millie was the fastest on that one. Way to go, way to go, way to go. I think maybe two more questions remain. Here we go. Will Tweedo hold the lead? Before he wrote Luke, Luke was a tax collector, doctor, carpenter, fisherman. Before he wrote Luke, Luke was blank. 5 seconds. Boom, he was a doctor. Who got doctor? All right. Here's our leaderboard. Whew, this is close, y'all. All right, going into the last question. We are close. We are close. Number 12. Luke said he wrote his gospel so that we could find life in Jesus' name, be his witnesses, know with certainty about Jesus, proclaim the good news, or do an 18-month series on his book. Luke said one of these is why he wrote this gospel. Know with certainty about Jesus. That's what Luke said. Was that the last question? Here's our final leaderboard. Allison, I'm going to need your help in a minute. Oh, Tweedo is the winner. All right, I want to invite Tweedo, Brand the Broken, and Ted, if you would come forward at this time to claim your prizes. You can just join me up here. Tweedo, Brand the Broken, and Ted, come on up. Come on, no, come on, yeah. I mean, like, all the way up. We got prizes. Hey, let's welcome them one more time. All right. Who is Ted? Ted, third place. Your third place prize is this wonderful I Love Luke t-shirt. I mean, yeah, I say that is awesome. That is fantastic. Yeah, yeah, just wear that in public, see what happens. Okay, second prize goes to Brand the Broken. And it is this custom welcome mat. Welcome, no one belongs here more than you, because that is the message of the Gospel of Luke. Oh, Tweedo, I'm so excited about this prize for you specifically. I am so excited about this. Tweedo, the first prize is the lost sheep. Congratulations. Congratulations. Hey, way to go. Congratulations. Congratulations. Hey, as they're making their way to their seat, taped underneath one of your chairs is the lost coin. Find it now, and you get the final prize. There is a lost coin taped underneath one of the chairs in the room. Got to reach under the front of the chair. There is a lost coin. We must find it. That's what Luke said in Luke 15. Okay. So this section is warm. Okay. This section is warm. I'm just saying. It is a really lost coin. And the way Jesus tells the story is that you don't stop looking. It's possible there's a lost coin taped underneath the front of your chair. Oh, I remember where I put it. The whole section is warm. The back section is hotter. Like, the back half is warmer. We must find the lost coin. That's what Jesus said in Luke 15. All right, Allison's got your prize. The lost coin gets the best prize of all, in my opinion, a free cup of coffee. At Mon Ami, who's They're a new coffee shop right down the road, so you can check them out. That was fun. That was at least fun for me. Great job, everybody. Give yourselves a hand. In the 3 minutes that I have remaining, I want to read the last four verses in the Gospel of Luke and just point something out, one observation about the last four verses of the Gospel of Luke. So if you turn with me, if you've got a Bible or a Bible app, Luke 24, verses 50 through 53, here's what Luke writes at the very end. He says, when Jesus had led them, the disciples, out to the vicinity of Bethany, he lifted up his hands and he blessed them. And while he was blessing them, he left them and he was taken up into heaven. And then, last two verses, then they worshiped him and they returned to Jerusalem with great joy. And they stayed continually at the temple praising God. What I love about this is Luke begins and ends in the exact same place. Both beginning and end of Luke are in the temple in Jerusalem. Luke began his gospel writing about something that was going on in the temple in Jerusalem. He ends his gospel writing about something that was going on in the temple in Jerusalem. But the circumstances in the situation were very different. The setting's the same at the beginning. The circumstances are very different. At the beginning of Luke, in Luke chapter 1, there are people who are in the temple, but they are desperate for God. They are desperate for something to change in their lives. They are longing for some kind of divine intervention. They feel like they have been waiting and waiting and waiting for something to change in their lives. They feel like they've been waiting for generations. They feel like their parents were waiting and their grandparents were waiting. And for hundreds of years, they've been waiting for something to change. They've been waiting for God to intervene in some way. They feel like they have been praying and praying and praying and begging and pleading, and they're getting no answer. They feel like nobody's listening. Can anybody relate to that? I mean, you can raise your hand in your heart if that's what you need to do, right? Luke starts with the story of this old married couple, Zechariah and Elizabeth. They've been doing, in their opinion, in their estimation, they have been doing everything right, but nothing's changing for them. Nothing is going right for them, even though they're trying to do everything right, right? They're praying, they're desperate. They're begging God to do something, and they're feeling like they don't have any answers whatsoever. They're depressed, they're lonely, they're discouraged, they're frustrated, they feel absolutely alone. Can anybody relate to that? Right? And then you fast forward from the beginning of chapter 1 to the end of chapter 24, and you got a bunch of people, and they've had that same kind of story. That has been their life story, right? They've been forgotten. They've been dismissed. They've been told their whole lives that they're not good enough. They've felt alone. They've been left out. And they're also in the temple. But it's a totally different scene, right? They're not depressed, and they're not feeling lonely, and they're not feeling discouraged at the end of the story. It says they're filled with joy, and they're singing, and they're dancing, and they're continually praising God. So the question is, what happens between the beginning of Luke chapter 1 and the end of Luke chapter 24 that turns the people from depressed to dancing? And sometimes I wonder, so you've got the disciples at the end of the story. They're continually praising God because of what they've experienced. Sometimes I wonder if they showed up to kind of your typical 21st century church gathering in 2024, I wonder what they would think. I wonder what they would think about the comparison of what they've experienced and then what they're experiencing when they walk into a gathering at a church in 2024. Sometimes, you know, not here, of course, but sometimes I wonder if they might walk into a church gathering and go, like, do they not know the story? Do they not know what happened? Does somebody need to tell them what's going on and all that God has done? It reminds me, several years ago, I was attending an Easter worship service. I've probably told you all about this before, but I was attending an Easter worship service in a church, just sitting out in the congregation, and they had three women who were reenacting at the beginning of the service. They're reenacting the first resurrection encounter of Jesus. And so these women come up to the stage, everybody's sitting in the church, and they come up and they're like, they come to the realization that Jesus isn't in the tomb and Jesus is risen. And they start doing, they're running through the aisles of the church and they're yelling, "He is risen! Christ is risen! He is risen!" They're like all through the aisles doing that. And the people in the church are doing this. And And sometimes it's just like, do we not know the story? Do we not know the story and the impact that it's had on the world and our lives, right? Something happens between Luke 1 and Luke 24. What happens to change the people? Right? Not a trick question. What happens? What happens? Not a rhetorical question. What happens? Jesus happens in the story. Jesus shows up in the story between Luke chapter 1 and Luke chapter 24, and it changes everything. Jesus happens. Jesus heals. Jesus saves. Jesus multiplies food. Jesus prays. Jesus teaches. Jesus confronts. Jesus challenges. Jesus dies. And Jesus is raised from the grave, right? Jesus delivers on the promises that God has been making for generations, that the people have been waiting on for generations. And the natural response to that, once the disciples realize who Jesus is and what he's done, and the fact that Jesus has shown up in the story, the natural consequence of that is that they are continually praising God because Jesus changes everything. When he showed up in the story of the disciples, in the story between Luke 1 and Luke 24, he changed everything. When he shows up in our story today, when Jesus shows up in your story, it has the potential to change everything. It has the potential to change everything. Amen. Something happens when Jesus shows up in the story, and it takes people from despondent and despairing and desperate and depressed to continually praising God and continually filled with hope. And the story of Luke is that's true today. When Jesus shows up in the story, when you invite Jesus into your story, when Jesus, his life, death, and resurrection, when they begin to take root in your heart and your life and your story, things begin to change. Things begin to change. And that's the whole story from Luke chapter 1 to Luke chapter 24. Jesus changes everything. I've got really two questions in total. One question for skeptics and one question for believers as we close out our study of Luke over the last 67 weeks. For the skeptics, and maybe some of you are skeptical believers, right? So maybe both questions are for you. For the skeptics, for the people who are still checking it out, for the people who are still unsure. I'm one of those people often, right? Here's the question. Have you carefully investigated everything? Because that's the story of Luke. That's where Luke starts. Luke is a skeptic. He's writing to a skeptic, and he's writing for skeptics. Right, he is a skeptic. He doesn't believe what he's been told for himself. And so he has to carefully investigate everything for himself. He's a skeptic. He's writing to Theophilus. Theophilus is a skeptic. He says, I'm writing so that you can know the things that you've been wondering about. That's skepticism. He's writing as a skeptic to a skeptic. And my question to us who are skeptics today would be, have you carefully investigated? Have you carefully investigated? This is what Luke says at the beginning of his gospel. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, the things that have happened. Just as we've been told by those who from the first were eyewitnesses. So they told some people, and they told some people, and they told some people, and they told us about it. This is written 20 or 30 years after the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, soon within that time span. And he says, with this in mind, all this in mind, the things that I've heard, the things that you've heard, the things that we've been talking about, with all this in mind, I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning. And so I decided to write an orderly account for you, Theophilus. Why? So that you can know the certainty of the things that you've been taught. I want you to know with certainty. I want you to know with certainty. And I would say after a 67-week, 18-month journey through the Gospel of Luke, which was written by a skeptic, for skeptics, here's a conclusion that I feel like I can make. We can choose to not follow Jesus because it's inconvenient. That makes a ton of sense to me because it is inconvenient. Following Jesus is not the most convenient thing you can do with your life. Because when you choose to follow Jesus, there are expectations that come along with that. Jesus will place expectations on you. But at the end of the day, I believe it will make your life better and it will make you better at life. It will make your life better. It will make you better at life. And I would say we can choose not to follow Jesus because it's inconvenient, but I don't think we can choose not to follow Jesus because it's inaccurate. Like, there's nothing more historically accurate, in my estimation, through all my study, than what we find in the Gospel of Luke. Like, even the most secular historians would tell you, no, this is a description of things that have happened. They might have different conclusions of it, but they would absolutely conclude, this is a historical narrative that happened, right? So we can choose, as skeptics, we can choose to not follow it because it's inconvenient, but I don't think we can choose to not follow Jesus because it's inaccurate. So my question is simply this, like, have you thoroughly investigated for yourself? And my encouragement and my challenge to you would be, if you're a skeptic, and that's okay to be a skeptic here. We welcome skeptics here. I heard the pastor of this church is a skeptic, right? So you're welcome here, but I would just encourage you to say, don't give up on the story until you've thoroughly investigated it for yourself. Don't give up until you've thoroughly investigated. And then the question for believers. The question for believers. Maybe you've come to believe that this is true. And maybe you've come to a point where you've said, you know what? I want to give my life to following Jesus. I believe in what this is all about. I want to be informed by that. I want to have a transformation in my life like the disciples from Luke chapter 1 to Luke chapter 24. I want that for my life. I want that for my family. I want that for our church. I want to be part of the kind of church that's continually praising God because of what we've experienced through Jesus. If that's you, that's awesome. And I would ask you this, who is your Theophilus? Who is your Theophilus? Luke investigated the events of the life of Jesus, not to keep it to himself. He investigated and he wrote it down and he shared it. And so if this is something that's come to mean something to you, I would just ask you, where are you going to share it? Who are you going to share this with? I love thinking about Luke. Like, we actually don't know what happened to Theophilus. We don't know if he came to believe in Jesus or not. We don't know what happened with the rest of his life. But I kind of imagine this scenario playing out. Like, I'm imagining Luke, who's carefully investigated everything. He's written down the story so that he could give it to one person, and we don't know what happened to that one person. But I have this image of God in heaven pulling Luke aside and saying, "Hey, you know that thing that you wrote down for one person, Theophilus? Yeah, I remember that thing. Hey, check it out. It's actually shaped and impacted the life and faith of billions of people across 2,000 years because you took the time to simply share it with one person. One person. And it's had this exponential impact that's changed the course of history. Who's your Theophilus? Who's one person? You don't have to think about billions of people that you need to share this with. Who's one person? Who's one person that you can talk to about the goodness of God? About what Jesus has done in your life? About the impact that being part of a church is making for you. Who's your one person that you can share that with? And so we're going to conclude our study of Luke in what I think is the most fitting way that we can, and that's by sharing in communion together. And so if you are serving communion this morning, you can go ahead and come forward and take your place around the room. One of the major themes of the Gospel of Luke, sometimes Luke's called the Gospel of the Underdog, and I love that. And the reason it's called the Gospel of the Underdog is what you see in the Gospel of Luke, what you see play out in the life of Jesus is that it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you are, it doesn't matter where you've been, it doesn't matter what you've done, it doesn't matter what you've said, the grace of God is available to you. It is freely available to you, not because of you, but because of Jesus, because of who Jesus is, because of what Jesus has done. And so nothing represents that more than when we share in communion together, because this table, this communion table, it has an open invitation with it. There are no prerequisites for you to come forward to share in communion. Everything has already been done by Jesus. God sent Jesus into the world to teach, to live, to heal, to die, and to be raised again so that we can connect deeply to him. And so in a moment, you'll be invited to come forward to receive a piece of bread that represents the body of Christ that's already been broken and given for you. You didn't have to do anything to earn it. And then you can dip that in the cup, and it represents the blood of Jesus that's been poured out for you. Already, it already happened. You don't have to do anything to deserve it. It's already been given for you. And so I want to invite you to join me in prayer as we prepare to come and receive communion. God, thank you for who you are. Thank you for all we've learned about you and all we've learned about Jesus through the study of the Gospel of Luke. I thank you for what we've learned about you in the parable of the lost coin, that there's nothing you wouldn't do to find us. I'm thankful for what we've learned about you in the parable of the prodigal son, that you are waiting for us. You're gracious to us. You are kind to us. And it doesn't matter what we do, you still pour out your love on us and your grace on us. And we thank you today for the gift of communion that represents all of this, the entire story of Jesus in one act. His life, death, and resurrection. That his body has already been broken for us and his blood has already been poured out for us. And all we have to do is simply receive that. And so God, I pray that as we receive that this morning, that you would work transformation in our hearts and in our lives, that we would go from Luke chapter 1 to Luke chapter 24. That we would be changed by your goodness, by your love, by your mercy, and by your grace. And so friends, this time for prayer is open, this time for communion, and these stations for communion are open, and you're invited to come and receive as you feel led.